Welcome to Om Times TV, a division of Om Times Media and Broadcasting. Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Welcome back to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live video series, and joining me today for the second time to share the stories behind the 10 books that influenced her the most on her life path is Cynthia Sue Larson. And for those of you who weren't here the first time and didn't hear this, Cynthia Sue is the best-selling author of several books, including one of my favorites, Quantum Jumps, Reality Shifts, and High Energy Money. She has a degree in physics from UC Berkeley, an MBA degree, a Doctor of Divinity, and a second degree black belt in, I don't know if I can pronounce that, Cook Sewell One.
Brilliant. Perfect. Okay. You got it.
Good. And Cynthia is also the founder of Reality Shifters. She's president of the International Mandela Effect Conference, managing director of Foundations of Mind, and creator and host of Living the Quantum Dream. She's also been featured in numerous shows, including Gaia, the History Channel, Coast to Coast AM, One World with Deepak Chopra, and she's been on the BBC too. So, Cynthia Sue Larson, welcome. Thank you for returning and going through this again with me.
Such a pleasure. Always a pleasure with you.
So. Yeah, we did it on purpose, didn't we? Just so we could hang out and have another conversation.
I'm sure we did.
I'm sure something like that, yeah. Okay, so the two questions we always start with, what was it like for you to put together this list? Was it challenging or was it easy?
It was awesome. Challenging in the sense that I love books so much that my bookshelves are double parked sometimes with, you know, people know what I mean if they've done this. If you don't know what I mean, it's got your regular row of books and then of course more books, which you have to have all of them. So there are some in front of the others and then you get more bookshelves, but there's still the double parkings and piles on top of piles of books everywhere. So I love books. So from that standpoint, figuring out just 10, that's challenging. But when you ordered it the way you did, the books that have been most life-changing for me, then it made it a lot easier because I do have a special section for such books that I keep them on their very own shelf. Again, it's like 200 books, but amongst those even, it's pretty simple to find the ones that influenced me, the way that I think, the way that I write, even the books that I've written. So I think these are very special in many ways.
Do you remember the first book that blew your mind?
Wow, it would have to be a children's book, wouldn't it? It's going to sound silly, but I think it may have been Winnie the Pooh, but I just really liked that book because I couldn't believe that the book was showing things going terribly wrong. You know, there'd be little Eeyore and he's just got his little honey pot. It's an empty pot of honey. It doesn't have any honey left in it. And he's putting a popped balloon in and out of it. It's like... And I thought that was mind blowing, like, wow. And these personalities in that story were so riveting to me. They just grabbed my attention. I really felt like Rabbit was such a character and Winnie the Pooh, of course, and Piglets. So I know it's silly, but I think that was mind blowing to me. That would be one of the earliest books that just blew my mind. Like, you can write about this? Like, this is okay to tell about someone who's that depressed? Wow. It was an eye opener. Because I think that was the first children's book where it got into heavy stuff like that.
What was, you know, when did you first become aware of there being much more to this world than other people seemed to be able to see?
I was quite young because I would see things and I would say, did you see the little scuttly thing? There's several of them, Mom. Did you see that? And no. then I just, you know, nobody else was seeing these things. So I, and not just that, but angels, and I was having lucid dreams and witnessing mind-matter interaction with reality. So I recognize that this is not what everybody's coming in with, that obviously this, and one of the books we'll talk about gets into this, so I don't want to spoil it for anyone. One of the books will definitely get into it, but it's at first, I thought I was normal, but then I realized I wasn't, and people would ask me questions, and I had a difficult time answering, because I'd be really feeling the realm of all possibilities. And I thought, don't they do that too? No, they just wanted to know, do you want to go to the zoo right now? And I'm like, well, you know, because I'm feeling it. And my mom could sense, like, oh, she's feeling things. She's feeling, my mom could tell I was feeling energies, but it wasn't something that was common. And she, my mom wouldn't do that. And nobody else in my family would do that. It was unusual.
Just was she open much to, you know, these thoughts?
Actually, I think surprisingly so, considering that she was raised in sort of a normal kind of an upbringing. Westerns, you know, grew up in Washington State and then moved to California with the daughter of her. She was the child of immigrants' families who had been, they themselves, her parents were not immigrants, but they grew up in those kind of families. And they grew up in communities where an entire community would build a house. Their home was built by the other people that were working at the same lumber mill. And I think that's quite unusual. So I think because of her experiences, seeing that kind of that closeness and sort of tuning in at a level, being around farms and animals and land and wilderness, and she loved to go into the gulch and just be with trees and nature. I think that made it possible for her to really feel energies also, even though she didn't have a language for it. She couldn't talk about it or didn't talk about it, but she could definitely appreciate it. Yeah.
What was that like for you growing up, knowing that you had this awareness that other people didn't? I mean, did it become difficult because you had to hide it from others?
Yeah, it was, as I became aware that I'm that different, I really thought I was on the wrong planet. Seriously, I did. I really did. I thought, okay, that's it. And so, you know, I got to a place where I felt like I can get out of this, but I, that experience is in the book that we'll be talking about. So I've got a whole chapter. We keep touching on it. It's interesting. Yeah. That's what happens when you talk about books like these. They're so pivotal, so central to my life. Of course, they're going to be meaningful.
But why don't we start then? And then I can ask you questions as we go along. First of all, are the books in order?
I have just put them in order, just in case. No, I mean, internet
are they in the order of preference? Like, this is my top number one.
Oh, I don't know that I would say that. That's too. It's like when you have children, how can you possibly put your children in order? They're in a birth order, but it's almost random. It's not the way you would think of them. It's not like my first child, of course, is my favorite. That's not quite right. No, I just love them all.
Well, let's start with number one then, which is Time, Space and Knowledge by Tathang Tulku.
Yes.
Published 1977.
Yes, I've got my copy of it here. And this is actually the second copy I had to purchase. If people know what that's like, it's because you flip through it so often that it literally falls apart. And then someone comes to your house and they're like, oh, you have this book. And then they pick it up and it falls apart in their hand. And then you're like so embarrassed. So that is what happened. So I had to get a second copy. The person who pulled it off the shelf is physicist George Weissman. And I've co-authored a physics paper with him just about very important topics that came from this book. We both found to our surprise and delight that this was one of, I think it's surely one of his top 10 books as well. And this book, he studied with the people, the person who wrote this, and he had a co-author. This is Tathang Tulku. So it's very Tibetan, it's very Buddhist, and it goes through experiential examples of how to get into the mindset of understanding time, space, and knowledge, which is pivotal if you're a physicist or if you wish to understand the mysteries of quantum physics, or as I've always wished to know since I was a child, what's the true nature of reality that we can know as a human being? Because it feels like one thing when you're between lives, and it's a whole other thing when you're down here on Earth. And so this book just takes you through wonderful experiential exercises. Like one of that really caught my attention was literally standing up and starting to take a step. You take one normal step, then the next step, you just sort of go at like halfway or half speed. And just start recognizing. And then most of these exercises are thought experiments, so you don't have to stand up and do them. But you start noticing very quickly how odd that is. And when you really invite yourself to go into that experience fully, you start experiencing the true nature of the relationship between time and space we take for granted, or most of us just think, well, you know, space-time, like Einstein talked about. But then when you recognize knowledge is a part of this, and they really do, these three go together, it's mind-blowing. So it's a whole book about that, if you like that kind of thing.
Do you remember when you read that book?
Yes, it would be in the 1990s, the early 1990s, mid-1990s. So it's been going on 20 years now. This was a huge influence when I wrote the book Reality Shifts. And I was recognizing that these reality shifts had been understood and recognized by Tibetans for millennia. And they actually advocate, don't get too preoccupied with these things, because we know, at least they themselves know, that consciousness is the goal, not the magic tricks. And well, they're not tricks, but it really feels like real magic. It feels like the world just changed. I thought something, I felt something, and now it is different, literally different. That's mind blowing when you see it happen. The Tibetan Buddhists say, of course that happens. You know, this is the way we are, spiritual beings. So let's not fixate on that. Let's go into our own personal development. And I really do appreciate that viewpoint, that vantage point.
So book number two is Born Aware by Diane Brandon.
This is the one we keep touching on. This is the one, you kept saying things and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to say something. So the first thing I think you brought up was, when did I first notice being different? And that's what this book is all about. People who really feel that they are different. And I think that this is more common than people realize. It certainly seems that way, because when people hear about this book, they often say, oh, that's me. So the subtitle is Stories and Insights from Those Spiritually Aware Since Birth. So what does that mean? It means, it doesn't mean that your life is perfect, certainly not. And so if you look at the regular lives of these people, a skeptic could say, well, they've all had difficult, some of them have had very difficult lives, some have had ordinary lives, and it's hard to see it just on the surface. But when you're recognizing what this experiences feel like to those of us who do remember a between time, a time before this life and perhaps after others, sort of that resting place, that's how I remember it. It's just a beautiful experience of feeling love and being surrounded by beings of light, and just it felt like everybody's there. There's no sense of hostility or disgruntlement, and there's just an awareness and an appreciation for everyone, and a respect and a love that's so deep. And when I came into this world, and I still remember that, and I didn't lose it, that's what's difficult. Because then when you look around and the world here on, as we live it on Earth, doesn't seem to match that, it's such a huge jarring discrepancy that I was longing and pining for that, going back to that. So to me, being dead is not scary. That's a return to that blissful state. It's wonderful. So there's nothing sad about dying or being dead. What's sad is for those of us who are left behind, who miss those who died. So I describe in this book how I felt when I was finally age 5 and I figured out, well, I can get back there again. I can, you know, if my parents were right when they said, be careful of traffic in the streets, it is dangerous. In fact, it's dangerous, so you might get mangled, which is not good. What if you're wanting to go back to being dead again? You want to die, not get mangled. So I had to think it through and recognize that I thought I had the skill set to actually leap in front quickly enough of a fast enough car and die. But then once I'd made that decision, I realized, well, what happened next is time slowed down and I had an angelic intervention. These beings that I remember from before my life, they showed up. It's kind of like I was, I wasn't playing a game with them. I was sincere. I was really feeling like that's it, I'm leaving. And they took that seriously and they showed up and they reminded me that I had chosen to be here, which was mind blowing to me. I didn't remember that part. It's like, I remember what it felt like to be between lives, but I didn't remember that this was part of anything I'd chosen. Like, really? That can't be right. But I trusted these angelic beings very much. And so we went through, they reminded me of three things: that my mother would be devastated if I died at such a young age, and she'd never really recover. They showed me a forward time frame, and all of them looked the same. She looked miserable. They just never really got over it. I kept thinking that she would, and I said, I'm sure she will at some point get over it. And then they showed me that I would not be able to help lots of people like I could if I stayed alive. And I thought, well, they'll figure it out. Other people are there to help them, surely. But they got me with the third one, which I kind of revealed, which was, you chose to be here. And, but worse than that, much worse, you'll be back. I'm like, what? Like, oh yes, you'll get there back. That's the thing you've forgotten. You'll realize that you need to be here and you will be back. And you'll have lost your 5-year head start. I'm like, no. It's so funny now and embarrassing also, because now I would hope that I would not make that choice. I would hope that I would recognize my life is not just my own. I need to be here to help others, obviously. So it's much more important to recognize that. And it's, you know, I was 5 years old, so in my defense, but this book is wonderful. I love it. It feels like home. So I read through the stories. They're not stories. These are firsthand experiences from people who remember what it was like. They describe the before time, and then they also describe how it was to integrate that with their lives. And it's not always so easy. It's because most of us land in families where it's not understood and you can't talk about any of that, not to mention all the stuff that I also remember about lucid dreaming and seeing energy beings and so forth. But
did it ever occur to you to wonder, why is it that I've come in with all this awareness and yet I don't remember why? I mean, that's hard.
Right. Well, I understand that. I get that on a level of you only really know what you know when you remember it yourself, it's not because I turn to this page and remember it. That's not real knowing. That's not proper learning. And so to properly learn things, we need to be down here at a place where we literally forget that we learned it before. And then we're sort of, you level to the place where you remember clearly where you really are. So on the spiritual journey, you know, some people pretend like they know it all and they're perfect, but usually that's not the case. If you're in a body, you're not perfect and you're working on things and it's challenging. And then you can empathize with others, hopefully, so that it's not just like you're helping them and you're thinking of them as less than. They're certainly not. So anybody that we're helping is just as wonderful and beautiful a being as we are. And that's, so it's, there's a lot packed in that question of yours. It's a lot to it.
Yeah. Did you have past life memories when you were young?
They were traumatic ones, which is why I didn't want to come into this life. So yes, I did. I had apparently investigated what a lot of people, myself probably also, thought maybe that would be a good way for humanity to go, to rely upon artificial intelligence, and it'll just figure things out for us and solve, you know, ecodiversity, global warming, all of these problems that seem too big, insurmountable for humans. I'm sure if we just had artificial intelligence, that would do the trick. Well, I went to such a place about 500 years in our future from now. And that was my very traumatic past life in the future, which it was horrific, really. So I would now be a strong, you know, what's the opposite of advocate? I would recommend we definitely do not put all of our eggs in the central artificial intelligence basket. That's a disaster, complete disaster, because that kind of consciousness does not understand what it is to be human. And at some point, we'll lose the freedoms that we require to be who we are. We need to learn through our mistakes. That's, I saw it firsthand, and it just, I think I had quite a bit of PTSD from that, actually. So even coming into this lifetime, I felt that I was being tracked by a central intelligence that knew where I was. So I would fall asleep dreaming backwards every night as a child, because that was a pattern that I learned in that past life in the future, not to be tracked. So I've got a lot of my very hardwired, hard, well-learned features from that past life in the future still with me, which I think is probably partly why I'm quite good at mind-matter interaction, actually. And I have an intrinsic knowledge of a lot of quantum effects, because I think it's a carry through that that's the perk, the good side. The downside is like, ay, ay, ay. But I really have a strong recognition, like, we need to work this out. As hard as it is to listen to each other, to respect two sides of a political divide that seems like an impasse, we need to do it. And that's That has to be our future.
So book number three is The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, published in 1991.
Yes, this is an autographed copy, which I got posthumously after the author had died. I realized this book is one of the best books I've ever read in my life. This is a real game changer. This was written by a physicist, Michael Talbot, who also is an experiencer of the kind of things that I'm describing, mind-matter interaction. And he writes about it in this book, as well as his theory of how to bring everything together. What's the quantum interpretation that could explain why you might wake up and everything, all the furniture and socks and so forth are completely in disarray. Like someone's come in and rearranged everything, even though the doors are locked and no one's been in the house. These are the sorts of things Michael Talbot investigates. And he does so brilliantly. He's just such a gifted writer, or was. I talk about people when they're dead as if they're alive, because we have their books and they feel alive to me. So the story of how I found the autographed copy was amazing too. I was guided to it, basically driving down the road one day, and I got a strong intuitive insight, just pull over, park here. Like, why? Okay, but what are we doing? And then park here, get out. And do you see those bookstores? Yes, two bookstores side by side. Go into that one on the left. Okay, go downstairs. Okay. And look on the shelf right in front of you. And here it was. I was like, oh, autographed copy. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I swear, it just felt like Michael Talbot himself had said, like, you love my work that much. Well, I want you to have this copy. Here it is. And at the time, it was just a rare find. Now I think it's more so. But what a brilliant book. It's just, I just opened the book randomly and the section header said, changing the whole picture. Exactly. I think that's like Michael saying, this is what it does. Yes, I agree. It totally changes the whole picture of how you view the world when you recognize that the David Bohm concept that everything is connected, that's a hologram and the holographic concept. That is the way reality works. We're all woven together. We're all interconnected. And that's what this quantum entanglement is offering us, is a conceptualization of if it is a hologram, if that idea is true, then you would expect to see things like we do see. And he gives a brilliant example in the book of, you can look at your ear, massage your entire ear, and it's as if you're giving your body a massage, because everything is connected in our bodies. And it's just like, he's got a picture in here somewhere of a little infant upside down in the ear, and that turns out to be exactly equivalent to the pressure points. I'm not randomly opening it to that properly, but anyway, you get the idea. And so between the brilliant explanation of this holographic interpretation, correlating it with Carl Prebrom's work with neuroscience, and then also bringing it together with the way that mind and matter definitely interact, there's no other book like this. It's one of a kind. It's just a genius masterpiece, in my opinion. I really love it.
Number four is The Untethered Soul, The Journey Beyond Yourself by Michael Singer. And that one was published in 2007. And you describe this as having the power to completely transform your life.
Yes. Well, you know, some of us are quite stubborn. I'm one of those stubborn people myself. And I used to be a type A personality before I went through a Kundalini awakening, reconnected with my, you know, that whole concept we talked about, of being born aware, because I'd buried it. I'd become a type A personality. I worked at Citibank. I was on the fast track to be a vice president. The combination of my intuitive psychic skills and then my hardworking, hard driving type A personality. Well, anyway, it was a mess in terms of a spiritual growth pattern forward. So how to break out of such a thing, if people are hearing that, like, that sounds like me, I'd love to be spiritual, but my mind gets involved. It wants to figure it out. It wants to think. It wants to chew on things. Well, then here you go. Here's the antidote. One of my favorite antidotes. And it's a beautiful book that is a meditation. Like, you go through it, you start at the beginning. If people who've read it know what I'm talking about. And it gradually, beautifully, gently unfolds. And before you know it, you're experiencing what it is to recognize that you are identifying not with your own thoughts that you think you are, to begin with, especially if you're a type A personality, like, I need to get things done. I've got my to-do list, yada, yada, so on and so forth. It can be crazy making. But then you start noticing, no, I'm not those thoughts. I'm not those feelings. I, the true me, is the observer of those thoughts and those feelings. And at that this book is a masterpiece because of the way that without even making any effort other than just you're just reading a book, it works the magic on you as if it's massaging you and pulling you gently, inviting you upward into an experience of you are your higher self, you are your consciousness, but with no buzzwords. It's the kind of magic it performs is extraordinary. So it's another one of these masterpiece books that I think a lot of people would have on their top 10 list, quite probably.
You say that at its core, it's a book about the energies of emotion.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Because it's, I think a lot of us let those things go unchecked and without noticing that we're involved in dramatic scenarios. We can let things like sadness feel like, well, I'm just sad. We define ourselves by it. And without knowing that we've fallen into a victim role by doing so, it's so this book works a kind of a alchemy, an emotional alchemy, kind of a magic on the reader. By gently just helping people extricate themselves from what could be a very deep well of sadness or anxiety or even anger. You know, these are three of the most common pitfalls that humans will fall into emotionally, and they correspond with feeling like a victim or feeling like you have to save the world and it's such a burden and the world is so heavy on your shoulders, or just feeling like angry because the world is all messed up and you can see what it needs, but no one else seems to see that as clearly as you do. So these are three pitfalls, very common traps. And the book doesn't describe that. It doesn't go into that at all, but it doesn't need to, because it just beautifully lifts people out of these. It invites people to recognize maybe you're more than that emotional characterization, that kind of a cartoon character. People feel sometimes like that's me and they want to own that, but it makes them miserable. This book is freedom. So the untethered soul is just saying, without really pushing it, no proselytizing at all, it's just a very gentle invitation. Like, how about being happy? How about feeling that you already are? And it just takes you there. So it's the best kind of book that way.
Mm-hmm. Number five is One Mind, How Our Individual Mind is Part of a Greater Consciousness and Why It Matters by Larry Dossey.
And it's just, what's hard here is picking one of Larry Dossey's books and not just having it all be about Larry Dossey, but that's ridiculous. Yeah. So we can't do that, can we? So then I went with, this is his newest book. They're all classics. Anything written by Larry Dossey, I'm already giving this Cynthia stamp of approval there. But this book is one of my all-time favorites because it gets into what we're talking about, this entanglement, this connection between ourselves and everything else. And we notice this, or Larry starts the book just showing that we notice this in nature. He starts the book, I can't remember which experience he was on, but I think it was maybe a coyote, but he goes on these trips in nature quite frequently. So he's very attuned to nature. And he shows us with these examples in the book that we can all have this experience. Even if you're feeling like, well, I can't go camping, I can't go backpacking, these experiences are there for us anyway. It's part of who we are. And so that there's an intrinsic interconnectedness that's already there. And this book I think it's one of his gentlest books. He doesn't have angry books at all, but this one, it feels like it's a very beautiful journey to go on. It's relaxing and soothing. I emphasize these things this year in the pandemic, because for those of us who are dealing with long COVID and so forth, you can't have any extra stress in your life. So the last thing you need is a book that is provoking all kinds of drama. We don't want that. You know, so this book is beautiful and healing. Of course, Dr. Larry Dossey is a medical doctor. He knows the power of words. And I think he uses that to the most beautiful effect in this book, because it's just every page to me felt uplifting and energizing and radiant, as well as enlightening, clarifying, and profound, but in such a gentle way. So it's not the kind of book that's beating you on the head or making you feel like you're doing things wrong or need to do things different or something like that, but instead just the aha kind of a book. Like the light bulb goes off and you recognize it's true. We really are connected. And with most of Dossey's books, I find that they're powerful to share with people who are just on that edge, on the fence, maybe a family member, like in my case, my father, who would respect a medical doctor. And I could say, here's a book that by a medical doctor. And he's basically showing that we're all connected. And that lends a lot of credibility for a lot of people. And then, you know, Larry, he also writes in such a way that it, there's just research after study after documented fact that is very soothing to people whose left brains are still chewing away at these things and want to understand. So that's all in there too, of course, because it's a Larry Dossey book. Brilliant.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com. Click on the Work With Me tab and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand. And then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
So number 6 is The World Is As You Dream It, Shamanic Teachings from the Amazon and Andes by John Perkins.
Yes, beautiful book. It's a small volume. As you see, this version is quite thin, but where to start? Okay, some people may wonder, a lot of people wonder, what's it like to go on a journey into the jungle, to really live with people who have these visions, who really literally dream with nature? And that's what these people do in the Amazon and the Andes. So John Perkins, he went there just to experience it. He really did live with these people, go on these plant journeys with them. And I'm not much of an advocate for herbs, that kind of thing, but put that out there. If people are turned off by such journeying, this book does feature ayahuasca dreaming with, you know, taking the plant concoctions with a shaman. It's a very spiritual thing. It's not just some playful, goofy drug trip to be experiencing drugs. No, it's really for the experience of sharing consciousness with the planet, with the plants, and with the spirits that are keepers of this ayahuasca spirit. And so that's the kind of thing that's happening in this book. But in addition, Perkins writes about extraordinary things like shape changing, like a shaman that goes through an airport and carrying all sorts of contraband and things that should never be accepted in any kind of an airport situation. But somehow he does it because it's all shape shifted. So it's possible to do that. Also in the same book, John Perkins describes these little orbs of light that float around the spirits of beings that are quite visible. And that's very familiar to me, having seen energy as a child. But what I like is that this becomes much more of a common experience when you get back into the indigenous cultures of our planet. I don't think it was specific only to the Amazon and Andes. From my research, I've seen that most of our indigenous peoples have had a tremendously direct dreaming nature with the planet, with the herbs, with the plants. So it's not, this is a very specific book about the Amazon and the Andes, but what happens for me is to go into that experience, it reminds me, wow, the Scottish and the Irish and the Celts, they had these experiences too. You know, they were dreaming with the earth. They were dreaming with the little people. These things are quite real. And then recognizing it's, but this is in our modern age. It's recent, you know, this is really happening. And it's very exciting that way. Also, John Perkins has a fabulous foundation, the Pachamama Alliance and the foundation, beautiful work that they're doing to help reclaim a sense of connection with the earth and the planet. So I really love what he's doing. Ever since he had his big wake up with that book he wrote, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and had the 360 degree, like, woo, like, that's wrong. We don't want to be tearing the planet apart and selling it. It's just a complete go. So he went from being one of the bad guys to really being one of the good guys. And I love that journey as well.
And it'd be great if it happened to more people.
Yes. Well, I think it is, but probably more than we know.
I think it is. I think it is.
It takes a lot of courage to come forward as John Perkins did, and as he continues to do.
Yes, as he continues to do. Number seven, is this next one? Yes, number seven. I love this woman. PMA Chatwater, Future Memory. It's one of my all-time favorite books.
Yes. Well, I'm glad we agree on this point. This is... I'm getting goosebumps just holding it. It's like, I can feel the energy. Like, it's like PMH herself. Thank goodness that we still have her too. She's like such a bright light. Yeah, this subtitle is How Those Who See the Future Shed New Light on the Working of the Human Mind. And of course, this one resonates with me. Within quantum physics, we have retrocausality, of course. But she's not kidding. This book takes that topic very seriously and does exactly what it says it's going to do. It shows with her example and the examples of others how people literally are able to get information from the future. That's very much, it can be very much a normal part of our daily lives. And she, PMH, describes the situation where she was getting future memories of her own life and how it led to her making rather a surprising move, something, you know, geographically to just pick up roots and move. She did a lot of things based on these future memories, actually. And so she's not just writing a book about this might be something we could do. She's saying, this works, I've done it, and it's wonderful. Which I just love it when an author is able to show the way with such a strong, bright spirit as she does. And the other favorite thing I love about this book is it in chapter two, I'm seeing if we can flip it right open. Well, you take my word for it. It has, I think I'm there. It's got a chapter called Reality Shifts. So she gets the credit for being the first author to literally use that phrase. Although I've come to find out subsequently, other authors used other phrasing, like Mary Rose Barrington wrote about just one of those things. And she is right from England. Brilliant author as well. But in terms of the phrase reality shifts, PMH definitely gets credit for that. And I was excited to see it because I'd independently found that to be the most descriptive phrase I could think of to describe things that appear, disappear, transform, and transport. And so not only does PMH talk about this getting information from the future, but she shares information about how this mind-matter interaction takes place and brilliant examples that are just mind benders of, for example, someone seeing pictures on a trip he took that he hadn't taken with a camera he didn't have. It's like, what is going on? I've got the evidence, but this makes no sense, and mind-blowing stuff. But it's the sorts of things I've been studying for more than two decades now. So this is not a one-off, like just one or two weirdos on the planet. It appears to be the way reality works. And so that's what's fun about PMH. She's basically saying the same thing. This is the way reality works. And here's an entire book that's, I think last time we were talking, because we did talk about this, I can't remember what we said before, but I think you pointed out it's written in such a way that it kind of takes you through a labyrinth. And of course, PMH frequently says that too. So, and it is. So it's a powerful book. And when you read it through, it's like changes your mind, changes your thinking.
Absolutely. And I remember exactly where I was when I read it. I remember, you know, the time, the location. And years later, when I met her and said about, wow, I just came out of that book kind of reeling a bit, as if I was a little bit drunk, having, you know, done a journey of some kind, walked a labyrinth. And she said, that's exactly how it was meant to be. But what was it? There was something I was going to say, because I've been communicating with her recently. Oh, I know. And she said to me, people read this book. Some people read this book every single year, and each time they revisit it, they get more information.
Yes. Well, it's quite likely the book itself might be changing. I don't know if she would agree to that, but I've witnessed these kinds of things myself. So, like, literally, if you're open to it and that kind of thing can happen for you, you can literally read the book and be open-minded to that possibility. It's not just that you didn't remember something. Keep in mind, maybe the book has changed, because this book is an active agent in our transformation for human consciousness, and it wants to be there. It needs to be there with us as we journey. So of course it makes sense. Of course it's going to grow and change. We don't expect that of things. We think that they're fixed and static. If anything was not going to be fixed and static, it would be this book. So
when I started the book club, the very first bookworm I wanted was that. And I cannot get her to give me an excerpt. I don't know why our communications, but I haven't been able to get an excerpt, and I don't want to write about it and make it a bookworm without giving people an experience of it. So I'm speaking to her again shortly, so I'll try good. One more time. But that was the first thing in my mind.
Oh, for sure. It's such a special book. I'm so glad it means so much to you too. Yeah. And now that you mentioned reading it every year, what a brilliant idea. You know, this is definitely one to do that with, for sure. Yeah. I think all of these are very meaningful to me, but I think for those of us who are engaged in changing consciousness for the planet, this is our friend, you know, for sure.
For sure. I don't think people realize just, you know, the power of what she shares and who she is. Yeah.
Well, I think if it's logical, if you look right now in this pandemic situation or whatever you want to call it, and recognize, what do we need the most right now? We need good vision, you know, of potential future. Like, my favorite question is asking, how good can it get? And so when you can connect to a good future and really bring that in and connect with it, that is very much a part of how good can it get. So to me, it's like, that's what we need right now.
So book number 8 is one that comes up from time to time, and that is Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing by Anita Morjani.
Yes, and I've read several books on near-death experiences, which I find fascinating, because they're the next, before there was the book Born Aware by Diane Brandon, the closest thing to it was the near-death experience, of course, because it's that same, it reminds you of, aha, I've been there. I know what it's like to be in that between place. But this was brilliant, because Anita Morjani described in such detail of how she was really trying to heal herself. She was desperately sick. And it was just all, everything at some point, I don't want to give the book away, but I think a lot of people have heard of this book. So hopefully if they haven't read it, definitely take this as a nudge to go read this book, because it's, I won't give it away, but I'll just take it right up to the exciting point, right when she's quite ill and she recognizes that she is actually dying. And she, there's a point of acceptance that happens there, like, well, okay. But then strangely, she went into this beautiful place where she could see like all these possibilities. She could see family members scurrying, traveling to be with her at her bedside and so forth. And she could see what the medical staff were doing. She could also see, it's like there's a possible life where everything can be fine. And then she realized at some point, like, I can choose that one. Okay. And so she chose that one. And then she came back into her body, which she had left. I think they'd recognized she'd died, and they didn't believe that she was as well as she said that she was. This is where I think there are lots of exciting parts to this book, and I'm just touching gently on them. I don't want to give too much away, but I love the way she describes that near-death experience and the place of possibilities, where you can see where things are and you can feel those energies and you can know things and be connected with everyone, because that is very much in keeping with the that born aware experience. I have not in this lifetime gone through the near-death experience quite that way. Although PMH said that I qualify with my five-year-old experience. She said that counts when I was ready to go and I'd planned it out. And then there was the angelic intervention. So anyway.
Well, I think one of the things about Anita's book too, that, you know, stands head and shoulders above some of the others is the, not just the amount of detail, but the fact that the doctor's records are all available and they've got the proof that systems in her body had shut down.
Yes. So it's, it gives people a lot of hope to recognize that you can be literally at death's door and beyond, just one step into the grave, right, pretty much. And then suddenly it can all reverse. Everything can change in a millisecond and then be completely fine with no explanation, really. It's sort of like the doctors didn't really take her word that I'm fine now. So it's like, okay, run the test, do whatever you have to do. But she knew she was fine because she could feel like now I'm on that different reality path. I picked a different path. So, brilliant.
Okay, so number 9 is conscious musings, contemplations to transform life and realize potential by Alexis Brooks.
Yes, and this book is kind of an aha fun book, but it's one that I wish that I'd had when I was going through my Kundalini awakening and when things were just going crazy, because Alexis Brooks, she comes from a background in broadcasting, so television and so forth, and she's got a very, like I did, a very logical mind, so also type A kind of personality, getting things done. And then what happened to her was she started experiencing things literally flying around of their own, like she's in the kitchen and something's flying around. So when you see that sort of thing, then you want to know what's going on. And I love the way that she basically talks about ideas that we need to evolve as a species, that she doesn't go into a dark place with these sorts of mind-matter interactions. Instead, she recognizes that we're growing through this and we're growing through it together. And she does it in such a way that engages your imagination and consciousness to ask good questions. So for people who are feeling, this is basically the subtitle, Contemplations to Transform Life and Realize Potential. So this is from an experiencer, someone who's on a spiritual journey, and she's very much aware that we're here. So some of us are definitely those who are called to be here at this time of awakening to help others on the journey to realize our potential and step into that. And so I think if you're feeling like you don't know how to go forward with that, or you don't know where to get started, the questions are the best way to do it. These kinds of contemplations and musings are just exactly what the doctor ordered. You know, if you're feeling like, well, I'm waking up, but I don't know quite what to do here. And I feel like it's a little bit scary. Like if stuff is flying around on its own, what's happening? What's up with that? But she's constantly uplifting, inspiring, and motivating. And you can just see that in just the image on the cover, this mandala in hands. It's a very, It's just recognizing this is all a gift. We've been given a great gift. It is a mystery. We're still figuring out what to do with this consciousness gift, but it's so much more than most of us were ever taught. And it's a small book, but don't let that fool you, because Alexis has been on a lifelong journey. I've known her for decades, and she's been one of the first people that I got to know who was really well-read, well-educated in mind-matter interactions. So I think she had a PhD just in absorbing information before she ever got started. And now she's hosting her own shows and she's on the History Channel and so forth. I'm glad to see her doing so well, because it really does show us all we can find our niche, and you don't necessarily need to know where you're going on your journey. You really do need the right questions. I think this book is excellent at helping get those bubbling, you know, in your life.
Yeah. I like one thing you wrote in your description. I mean, everybody now is talking about getting back to normal or creating a new normal. And she says that one of the things, you know, is one of the questions we should be addressing is paranormal the new normal?
See, I love Alexis. Yeah, they're so playful and so genius. That's total Alexis Brooks. Yeah, exactly. And that's a good question. I think it has to be. I think we need to wake up our full powers. There's a lot of people I wish I could have put in here and I didn't, but I think people know Dean Radin and books like Super Normal. So that goes with that saying. Yes, what a genius. So that it's just, these are our birthrights, these kinds of abilities. And so you might read Dean Radin's book and say, okay, but now what? And, you know, this is the book. Here's what, you know, ask the right questions, get on the, find your path. And by asking these questions, by musing about these certain things, it activates, very much like that book by PMH Atwater, Future Memory, where you read it and it changes you. So you get into a place of, I feel like things are opening inside me. And I really did feel that way reading through that book.
So number 10 is Soul in the Storm, Stress Management Through Mindfulness and Inner Transformation, Nancy Wagerman.
Yes, I don't have I have that only in ebook form, so I can't hold it up. And also this one's special because I recognize I need to put something here for all of us who are in this. And I was talking to your show producer. She asked how I'm doing. And I forget what I said, something like it's, I forget what the one word I used was, but she said, that doesn't say much. And I said, well, it's like I'm in a foxhole. It's like a war zone. I'm in a battlefield. She said, that's more like it. So anyway, yeah, if you're feeling like that for whatever reason, I'm dealing with long COVID. I'm on 13 months into it. And that's anybody that knows, anybody that's in it, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to go into it because it's not fun for most people. It's like, what are you talking about? It's rough. Oh, that was the word I used, rough. And she said, rough, that's not very much. Yeah, okay, more than rough. But let's get back to the book. This book is brilliant. It's not just what you need. It's whatever's happening this year. We are all being challenged to pull out all of our coping mechanisms, really, regardless what's happening. It's rough for everybody. So this, I very seldom see a book that's packed, that's got all of the best advice that I could even imagine, that I know of, that I can think of, and some that I had not even thought of, all in one place. And so she's done it. This book is brilliant. It would be my number one go-to if you just want a book like I need. Where's my emergency pack? Where's the operating directions for 2020 and 2021? Like, I didn't get my set. Well, here it is. It's how to survive this, thrive, and come through the other side. It's a reminder for most people who are old souls. You already know this, but you need it. You need to be reminded so that you don't let things get you sucked into that drama and losing sight of what really matters. And it reminds you of coping skills and tools that can easily get set aside because we don't have time or because this is a pandemic and I have to do these other things. And before you know it, you're not doing your self-care routine, or maybe you don't know all the things you can do. And this is the best compendium of everything in one place that I've seen.
You know, there's more than one pandemic going on right now. And there's the pandemic of the, the mind and how many people's minds are being impacted by the media and the constant headlines shooting past on your phone and the constant, wrong footing because something is one way one moment and something else the next. And
yes,
finding stability in that.
Yes.
It's really challenging for people.
So it's really important to have a source of sanity. And I feel like this is the touchstone that I would most recommend, besides whatever person's spiritual touchstone might be. Most of us have faith that we're relying on this time in our lives, hopefully. And if you don't have that, well, then at least this book can give you some tools, and it's brilliant. But you're right, there's more than one pandemic going on. It's kind of like such a strange time of challenge for humanity.
Yeah, on many, many levels. Yeah. And I think the most important thing we need to hold on to is our sovereignty, is, to know that we can stay right here, and gather our energy around us, and we can get through this. But the minute we start...
Well, for me personally, kindness has been key. I feel like I've gone more into my spiritual path. I just know I need to be kinder to myself for healing. So even if I meant to do a lot of things, if I can't do them because I need 13 hours sleep or 15 hours sleep, oh well, there we are. So it's been a time of great grace, and for me a beautiful opportunity to move into that state of higher consciousness. And grace, really, with love, with kindness, with compassion for myself. And then I can give it to others. So we don't want to forget that.
And I think someone's asked if you could just hold that book up again.
Conscious Musings. I've got this one. I don't have the one about the soul in the storm.
Okay. Of course you don't. No. Okay.
Maybe I've got a picture of it.
There we go.
Okay. Soul in the Storm.
That'll do. It's just, it's good to have a visual marker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's your 10 books. And we haven't talked about a great deal about your own books.
Ah, yes.
You know, I love Quantum Jumps. I love Reality Shifts. Quantum Jumps was, I think, our bookworm a couple of months ago. You know, you've had so many experiences, and with your website realityshifters.com, you've had, and your newsletter, you have monitored and collected, you know, so many incredible experiences out there. Is there one experience that you think is a standout, or are you just, you know, constantly being wowed?
Yeah, I'm constantly wowed. I hear so many. There's one that I'll give you I haven't really revealed this on my website or in my newsletter. I think it's okay. I think we've hit a point where these reality shifts are becoming normalized. I say that because for the last 2 months, I've heard from three people that said, use my full name, give my email address. That's the first time in over 20 years that anyone's ever said that. So we've hit a level, it's like seeing a UFO. People don't think you're nuts. They think, oh, you saw it. Where was it? How big was it? What did it look like? And so instead of people saying like, you're weird, I'm going to step back. It's much more appreciation, recognition that this is an experience a lot of people have. So having said that, I have heard from people in right there in England. You know, I've heard from people who are like the House of Parliament and so forth. I've heard from the Pentagon here in the United States. So I'll share an experience. I did put it in my website. I think the one from Parliament I didn't put out. Sometimes I'm told these experiences, and then they say, you know what, let's just keep this off the record right now. So I do honor that. But sometimes people just wanted to share these things. But So this going to the Pentagon experience, there was an individual, I'm not going to name names, and because on the site, I did use a pseudonym, I just referred to it as a large building. It was the Pentagon. So he was, that building is enormous. It's the shape of, it's got five sides, and then there's an inner courtyard, which is the size of several football fields. Yeah, American football fields. They're very gigantic. So the building is huge. And he was on one floor and going down, instead of taking the elevator, he was taking the stairs. But before he'd taken the I think the reason he took the stairs was to avoid someone coming toward him that he didn't want to talk to, actually. So he's like, I don't want to talk to that person. I'm going to quick go down the stairs. Okay, so that's what precipitated the event. That matters because sometimes the emotions that we feel and the state of mind we're in can totally transport us. It turns into like a Twilight Zone story. He comes down the stairs. He's on the next floor down, looks around, and he's on a different, completely different part of the building than he'd started in, which is impossible because this thing, it's like bigger than an airport terminal, like at London or Heathrow or something. It's huge. It's like on that same scale. You don't just get confused about where you are, or if you do, it's like unthinkable. Not only that, but the walls were very different. It's like everything was very confusing to him. And that was a point of sort of panic, like, okay, what's going on here? So he jumped back into the stairs, went back to where he thought he could, you know, get back out again. And things were normal, but it made no sense. And then later when he tried to revisit that and see like, what is this? You know, is this some sort of a wormhole to some other dimension? Because it's like he went in one stairwell and ended up somewhere else completely different in the building, and it looked different. And that's got several components of a lot of reports people say, where they're in a city street, and sometimes that street looks one way, like it's been bombed out in World War II. This is a European experience. Other times it looks fine, like it never got bombed. And they're like, wow. Like, oh, sometimes the coffee shop is really cute. Other times it's, you don't want to go down that street. They never did fix it up. It got bombed, and it shows that they should do something about that street. And other times they did do something. So those kind of stories to me, those experiences are remarkable because they're showing us that things we take for granted, like buildings, streets, they can all be very different. And people are experiencing that. And sometimes it's our state of mind that can allow us to experience these things. And I think I've got some like that in Quantum Jumps and you know, there's one in England with a woman that remembered a pub that just suddenly changed, like the colors were completely different. These kind of things are fascinating to me because it's just like, how did that even happen? How could something like that completely be so different?
What happened in Parliament or with Parliament?
That was so long ago. Yeah, sick kind of reality shifts, but because the person, it wasn't anything shocking about like, oh, the case went different. It wasn't like that. It was some sort of a normal kind of a story, but the individual just felt like, I can't say anything because of who I am. Like, so this has to stay. So I will honor that. I'll just say I did hear from someone. And I've heard, that's not the only time I've heard from members of high level governments around the world. So it's, this does happen. And but I think, like I said, we're getting to a normalized place where it's okay to, it's going to be okay pretty soon for everybody to talk about it. And it won't have that same weird feeling of you must be crazy. Instead, people will start recognizing, yeah, sometimes things do change. we're not quite there, but we're getting there.
There was an article the other day. I bookmarked it. Let me see if I can find the, didn't have time to read it. US Navy has patents on tech it says will, quote, engineer the fabric of reality.
Wow.
And that was a news piece about last week, I think. I saw that. Haven't read it yet, so I don't know. But if the US Navy has got patents on things that can engineer reality, you can bet your life that reality can engineer itself. Anyway,
absolutely.
Time it wants.
That's right. Yeah, there's no need to get excited about that in the scary sense at all. Because, like you said, it's been here for millennia, and that's what the Tibetans have been telling us. And that's what the indigenous people have been telling us. So, and what my own experience, my past life, and the future shows us is, let's not get too worked up about, yay, let's let the technology do everything. No, let's not do that. Let's do what Alexis Brooks points out, and paranormal can be the new normal. And in fact, I know that's true for a lot of the reverse engineering that happened with these UFO devices and so forth, is that it was shocking to scientists to discover that the materials they were looking at seemed to be interactive with people's consciousness, with our state of mind, with our heart-centeredness and so forth. Not everybody can get these devices to operate. That's a whole different subject. But so when I look at the Navy and so forth, it's like, sure, they've known about these things for a long time. Finally, they're recognizing we need to cooperate with these innate materials to create things in a good way.
I interviewed a guy about 5 years ago who'd written a fictionalized account of an experience. And he was one of these, he was in some kind of Texas, you know, group of people who investigated UFO phenomena.
Yes.
And in his book, his hero was taken into an underground chamber, and there was a vehicle there that was not of this, you know, not of Earth. And he was shown how the captain of the vehicle, if you like, the pilot of the vehicle, it was a symbiotic relationship.
Yes.
It operated on the guy's thought processes, and it couldn't operate without him. And,
right.
I asked him, how true is that? You know? And he said, it's true, but he couldn't give me any evidence for it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard similar.
We've seen this in fantasy and science fiction.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'll be interested to follow up on that article you mentioned, because I haven't read it yet.
Cynthia, you've been running how long, Reality Shifters? I mean, ever since I've known you, and that's 20-some
yes.
years.
Well, it started in around 1998, and then officially the website Reality Shifters around October, I think, 1999. And so it's been more than two decades. So it's been quite a long, steady presence, which I think is good. And because then I can share these firsthand reports, which are still on the website. People sometimes write to me and say, where are they? I need to change the way that shows up on the main page, because it's, I think, the most comprehensive, steady compendium of such reports for more than 20 years, just every month showing the description of where these reality shifts are happening, who's noticing them, and so forth. So it's been quite good to contribute to humanity that way and share this with everybody.
So aside from people lately giving you permission to share their names and identities, what differences have you noticed over the years, and especially of late?
A lot more playfulness. I'm noticing people are getting to a point where these are not terrifying experiences, although they certainly can be when you see an entire city block transformed, or if you're climbing the stairs and you end up like in the Twilight Zone, like this is not the right building and everything's different. That can be scary. But I think there's a lot more playfulness, a lot more fun, a lot more people recognizing that they're enjoying the experience, or starting to recognize that even if the specific experiences they are currently having may not be optimal or the most fun filled, they're recognizing if this is happening, then I could be having some more of the fun ones. So I definitely see more of an awareness that people are noticing that they have something to do with it. It's like that UFO with the pilot being symbiotically connected. I think people are starting to recognize, oh, I think I am having something to do with this. And that's fun to see that realization, the light bulb going off. It's not something I've been pushing. I've been very open to receiving experiences the way people have them and sharing them. If they attribute that their grandmother helps them find a wedding ring and that's why it popped out, or they have elves helping them in the garage and they're a mechanic, okay. I say they think it's their elves or they think it's their grandmother. That's fine. So I'm not putting mapping my own belief structure onto any of it. Instead, I'd like to find out how are they interpreting this? And what I'm noticing is that there's much, as the years go by, as the decades go by, there's more and more attribution to an awareness, like this may have had something to do with how I was feeling. And I think that's a wonderful piece of evidence in our human transformation and evolution as a species on the planet right now.
Has it never occurred to you that you could have a gold mine there if you were to publish a compendium of these? I mean, you think about the Guinness Book of Records, which is a perennial, you know, seller. You think about some of these, you know, unexplained happenings. You could put them all together and bring out a new one every year.
Yes. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of material here. That's for sure.
And I would imagine people are getting more and more, you know, open to reading books like that.
Yes, absolutely. My current project, I'm still in the middle of a new book, which it's not quite finished yet, but it's about the Mandela effect and its community, its society. It's just all of the people, because when you start experiencing collectively these sorts of reality shifts, then it's a whole new thing. And so that's the book I'm working on right now. And yeah, at some point I'll probably go back and mine the website. But in the meantime, everything is there. It's like one massive ebook. And if people can't find it, just send me an email and I'll show you how to start from page one of the Your Reality Shift stories. it's a lot of fun. And
when
you're right.
Do you think that the Mandela effect might be finished?
It's hard to say because it was off to a fast start with this book. It seemed like it wrote itself in just a month or two, and it was pretty much all there in mostly finished form early 2020. But then with everything happening and the events of the world, there's a material and there's reviewing and editing. So it slowed way down. And books are like living beings. And so it seemed like it had a rapid growth phase, and then it's dreaming, it's sleeping, I'm dreaming with it. And I'm sure we'll re-engage and I'll be bringing it forward. Hopefully either this year or next year, that would be just realistically end of this year at the earliest, maybe next year.
Cynthia, is there any, anything you want to leave us with? I know I want to remind people to go and sign up for your free monthly e-zine at realityshifters.com.
Yes.
I know you're giving away some free gifts.
Yes. Yeah, I've got free gifts when you sign up for the newsletter, and you can always unsubscribe, and I don't sell the list, never sold the list to anybody. So there's no spam. You can always opt out. And then if you change your mind, you can always come back. And if you want to see what you missed, everything is also online. So all of the newsletter issues are archived there at realityshifters.com. And that's also the best way to follow what I'm doing, what I'm up to, what's going on. The other exciting thing that's been happening is our International Mandela Effect Conference is starting something called Open Tables, where we, our first one just went out on our YouTube channel. So it's International Mandela Effect Conference on YouTube. And we'll be having another one in the next month or so. So we talk about this Mandela effect and the kind of trends that we're seeing. Some of the board members get together. In the future, we'll have guests as well. Sometimes we'll have a special theme. Our first episode was about the golden timeline and showing these monoliths that are showing up in the world. What does that mean? How do we choose timelines and that kind of thing? So we also talk about manned animals, which are some extinct animals that are coming back and some that are quite remarkable that you might not realize or recognize, like, how did this suddenly show up? So the Mandela effect is a lot of fun, and love to invite people to check that out as well.
Cynthia, thank you so much for coming back to do this a second time. I really appreciate it. And of course, it's always great fun to talk with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandy, for all that you do, for these excellent events that you put together, and just your entire career. And you've been such a constant source of light through all the technology issues and everything. And now these pandemics, yes. So thank you for holding steady and being such a bright source of light, like the North Star. We really appreciate it.
Never been likened to a star. That's really lovely. Cynthia Sue Larson, thank you for joining us. And to everybody at home, do sign up for Cynthia's e-zine. I mean, there's all sorts of good things that she's doing, and it's a constant source of delight. So Cynthia Sue Larson, thank you. We'll leave it here. We'll be back next week with another edition of the No BS Spiritual Book Club video series.